I have a policy that sometimes comes back to bite me, that if somebody has something they don't want included, even if it's after the interview, up to and including the entire interview, that I will not use it. So it's not really journalism. It's, you know, giving someone control over their story. And sometimes people are on the fence because they're a little bit embarrassed when they worry people might judge them. But in the case of this week's guest, I think that the thing that she is thinking is in the realm of dumb kid stuff was really kind of amazing. And that is, she left home at the age of 16 to move across the country and in with her boyfriend, but only after securing her parents' permission, and then went back to them and made amends. And as a result, had a wonderful relationship with her parents for her whole life and has done these amazing, amazing things in her career. So I left it in, and I think it's kind of the best part of her story. Wendy Hickey.
But the first thing that we hear has nothing to do with cash or business or income, and it has everything to do with confidence.
This is In Her Words, a podcast from manlisting.com, featuring one man listening to the stories of real women in their own words. In Her Words, a conversation worth hearing, because every woman deserves to be heard.
Hey there, and welcome to In Her Words, the podcast. We're getting up north of 200 episodes, well into our fifth year now, and they said it wouldn't last. This week, some of the best stories come to me by friends of friends, and my friend Kendall Kendrick, who's been on this podcast, is working with Mac 250, is making a big difference in local history. She put me in touch with the woman who created Art Pop, a marriage of her experience in the billboard industry with her love of local artists. And she has become to many somebody called Artist Mama. She loves it. Art Mama, Wendy Hickey.
Where were you born?
I was born in Charleston, West Virginia. Hospital. For about a minute.
Yes. Hospital or home?
Hospital.
And for your mother, you're number what of how many?
I am 4 of 5.
And after that minute, you all went where?
To Hawaii. We were military. Yeah.
What branch?
I was born Navy and raised Air Force.
How did that work?
My parents divorced when I was 5 years old, and I was raised by my stepdaddy.
Oh. Yeah.
So my birth father was military Navy, and my parents divorced at 5, and we were while we were still with him, and after West Virginia, it was Hawaii next, and then California after that. And my parents divorced between Hawaii and California. My mom met another military man, married him, and we were raised by him. He took on 4 children that were not his.
Wow.
Yeah, and then had another baby. So my mom decided at 38 to give her new husband another baby so he could have a baby, because he came from a family of 10. Yeah. And while he appreciated the 4 of us, he did want his own child. So my parents had my baby sister.
What part of California?
Oh my goodness, we were in California a lot. So in the military, from birth to 16, I probably moved every 2 years of my life.
But you stayed in California?
No. After California was Japan, then South Carolina, then California, then South Carolina, then California. And after California, I went back to South Carolina as a very young person. I left home at 16 years old and moved to South Carolina and stayed there for a lot of years. So when people ask me in a casual conversation where I'm from, I say South Carolina, but I'm honestly from nowhere. I've moved too many times to be from anywhere.
And what prompted the move at 16?
I was a rebellious child and had a boyfriend who lived 3,000 miles away and just insisted upon I needed to move back to South Carolina. And I did.
And how did your mom and stepfather, what was their reaction?
It was very difficult because I had been literally asking them every day for a year if I could move back to South Carolina and be with my high school friends and my boyfriend and all of those types of things. And they were like, you are just far too young to do that. So I can't believe I'm talking about this to you, but I am. So my parents
said— But you don't
have
to if I'm prying.
No, it's okay. If it's relevant when we're all done, then keep it. If it's not, don't. So my mom said to me, a year from now, when you get out of your junior year of high school, if you're still insistent upon moving, I'm going to let you go. Because she just imagined a year later I would change my mind. And I didn't. And I left that night. And wow. I got on a Greyhound bus to Los Angeles and got on a plane ticket that I was hopeful to be there at the airport for my boyfriend and his family at the time. And I left home and moved to South Carolina. Lived in a trailer that cost $225 a month. So I was a senior in high school, taking the school bus to and from school and going home to my own home.
And did you have a job?
Not in my senior year of high school, but the day after I graduated high school, yes, I went to work full time.
So who paid the rent?
So my boyfriend, and if I did a little side hustle here or there, did an errand for somebody or something like that. But literally, we lived in a pretty rough little place for till we could get on our feet and establish things. And I ended up going to work for an electrical contractor. I was a secretary and a payroll clerk at 17 years of age, doing my own thing.
Well, did you ever feel like I've made a mistake, or were you like, nope, this is great.
This is great. Yeah, it was hard. It was really hard. But I was an old soul as a young person. I think I was probably more of an adult at 12 than most adults are. And so I grew up really fast, really young. And it worked out for me. I certainly wouldn't recommend it to anyone else to ever leave home at a ridiculous age of 16, but it worked out okay for me. And it worked out okay for me because I worked my tail off from the time I was a 14-year-old girl until today.
Now, there are some girls, young women, who have a break with their mother or stepfather, and they like never talk again, or it's kind of irreparable. Did you maintain a relationship with your mom?
Yeah, really interesting. So my parents, you know, I was a pretty rebellious child, obviously, to leave home at 16 years old. And so I would say in those moments from like 12 to 17, not so proud and probably not somebody as a daughter somebody would want to brag about. But when I made the move, I flipped the switch. And I decided, if I'm going to leave home at 16, I'm not going to let what should prove to be true in my life happen. And I'm going to really step into this new life and figure out a way for myself. And when I flipped the switch and became a nice young lady and finished out my senior year of high school, I realized the pressure that I put my parents under. And I've probably apologized for that a million times. And I have since lost both of my parents. And I feel very much that I made amends with them and did right by them and made them so proud.
Yeah.
But it wasn't easy getting there. But once I became more of an adult in my mind, I was certainly wasn't my age. I made up for it tenfold with my parents and did right by them.
And some parents will forever like hold it over your head. So I gather they were receiving of that. They were accepting of
that. They were, yeah. I was very grateful for my parents not holding it against me. And, you know, like a mother should love their child no matter what. Mm-hmm. She did. Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. So my mom's been gone for 14 years now and my dad's been gone for 4.
Wow.
Yeah. Great story and great people, and they had a lot of faith in me, but I certainly wasn't very much of a good child between 12 and 17, but I made up for it.
Yeah. Do you have kids? Have you ever had
No,
kids?
I've never had my own children.
Yeah. Forgive me, but is that just the way it worked out, or did you?
So very interesting. I love your line of questioning. It's interesting. People don't usually ask me about things like this. So, because it always is focused on art pop. I was married at a very young age to the boyfriend I...
Oh, wow.
But we are no longer together and haven't been for many, many years.
Yeah.
But we actually got pregnant once and I lost the baby.
Oh.
So I did have a miscarriage in my time. And, you know, the work that I do now has brought me close to so many artists that they literally call me or text me and call me mama. Oh. Hi, Art Mama. How's my fairy art mother today?
Oh.
Art Mama, Mama. I hear it all the time. So
that's got to feel good.
It feels amazing. So I have hundreds of artist babies. I just don't have any of my own.
Now, how did you get from secretary to art world?
Oh my goodness, what a journey. So I worked for a electrical contractor at 17 years of age.
In what town?
In Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Okay.
I call Merle's Inlet, South Carolina, home.
Right.
And in fact, I'm going home to my 40th high school reunion this weekend.
Well, congratulations.
So I did graduate high school. After high school, going to work for an electrical contractor by day, and I worked in a surf shop by night. So I did some very businesslike work at by day, and then worked for a surf shop at night, and did a lot of retail and fashion merchandising work for many years. Got into a sales and sales management career in the retail world, and decided I just cannot do that anymore. I didn't want to be in retail anymore. I wanted to have, you know, days off, and I wanted to have holidays off and things like that. So I took a position with Adams Outdoor Advertising in Florence, South Carolina, in 1998. And it completely changed the trajectory of my life. Billboards have been my life. So I went to work for the fourth largest billboard company in the nation. I had never sold billboard advertising in my life. I came from a very much of a retail background and fashion merchandising background, and worked my way up the ladder there. And I met a young lady who was offered two jobs in one day, one with a pharmaceutical company and one with a billboard company. She took the pharmaceutical job and she said, "You need to go to Adams Outdoor Advertising and talk to them." So I did. And I left that interview knowing that I was going to go to work there. Like, there was no doubt in my mind I was going to get that job. And I did. And I was a local salesperson. And I worked for the Florence, South Carolina division of Adams. And I sold the Sumter, South Carolina market near Shaw Air Force Base, which happened to be a base I lived at as a young child. So it all kind of came full circle. And I started selling billboard advertising. And then Adams moved me 5 times. I had an amazing 16-year career in outdoor advertising. I became a sales manager, a general manager. I moved 5 times. I had an incredible career. During that career, in one of my moves, I was in Pennsylvania. And I joined a board of directors for a local arts council. I was thinking, what am I going to do to be a great board member? It was probably my second board position I had ever had. So I wasn't, you know, I was a little green in that area. And I thought, gosh, I sell billboards by day. Why in the world wouldn't I do that for artists? And so I had the idea of Art Pop, not named Art Pop at that time. But I would meet these local artists from my community, and they would say the same thing to me. I don't know how to market myself. How do I get seen? How do I get known? How do I price my work? And I thought, well, I'll be damned. That's what I do. So I'm going to do that for artists instead of building big brands, build, you know, local artists, small businesses. And so that's when it started, very grassroots. I would come to you and say, if you could pay for your vinyl, the material that wraps around the billboard, we'll put your art up on available billboards. And that's how it all started. Very grassroots, no mission, no nonprofit.
In Pennsylvania?
In Pennsylvania. So in 2002, the first Art Pop program that ever existed, I did there. And then I did the same thing again in Michigan, in 2 different cities in Michigan.
You have a picture of some of those billboards from back then?
Probably somewhere.
Are there some artists who to this day will say, I remember you?
Betcha. You betcha. Yeah. It's been such a beautiful transition from the paid world of advertising and building big brands to giving that same knowledge to local artists. And it's changed so much. So when I left Pennsylvania, I repeated that, not known as Art Pop, but helping artists in Michigan. And then just before I was moving to Charlotte and getting transitioned to Charlotte, I decided that I wasn't going to play around with Art Pop anymore. I was going to get very serious about it. And so I got a whole bunch of colleagues together, industry people, friends, artists, and we came up with the name Art Pop. Billboards are considered outdoor advertising. So the name Art Pop, the pop is public outdoor project.
Yeah.
So most people don't even know that at this point, you know, because we've changed the mission so much and has grown so much. We don't talk only about billboards now because we do so much more. But when I moved to Charlotte, literally the day I moved to Charlotte, I went to the Arts and Science Council and to Adams Outdoor Advertising and pitched Art Pop to them. They both said yes. So Art Pop is now in its 11th year, and it's my 11th year of being in Charlotte. So it all happened very, very quickly, and it's been beautiful.
Now, I'm going to back up to something, and I have a selfish interest in this too. A lot of artists have the problem in the business side. And you mentioned this business of how much do I charge? Selfishly, I'd like to know, how do you sort of coach or guide an artist into really asking for what they're worth?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so worth is relative. So I would say that most artists have a different worth. Some are looking to be full-time artists. That's their career, that's their business. They probably have a different worth than maybe somebody who does art as a hobby, who doesn't have as much interest to go into being a full-time artist. So, and it also depends what is your discipline. So some artists who are painters may have a square inch rate. Some artists that are muralists may have a square foot rate. If you're a sculptor, it may be by whatever it is that you're creating, or an installation type artist. So everything is very different, but I always talk to the artists about what is your perceived value? What do you believe you should be compensated at for a particular job or commission? And we start from there.
Typically, do you find that artists overvalue themselves or undervalue?
Under, all the time. Majority of the time, I'd say 9 times out of 10, they undervalue themselves.
Why is that?
I cannot figure that out to save my life, because look what they do for a community. You know, look what they leave behind in a community. Look what they impress upon a community. They bring the community together. There's so much value in art and what they do, but they don't see it that way. I don't think they see their value as much as the public sees their value, or I see their value. They always need a little nudge and help with that.
And sometimes it helps if it's worth it to the artist to have a representative who says, this piece is $10,000. And if the artists were doing that, they would say, oh, but I really like you, so I'll let you have it for $5 or whatever. And it helps them to have a representative. When somebody says, I'll give you $5, they go, it's $10. Well, I'll give you $9, it's $10.
Yeah. And I think that takes time to have an artist believe in themselves that way.
Or to have a representative who'll say.
Yeah.
And then if that person takes $1,000, you're still getting $9,000 instead of
five. Exactly. The difference in Art Pop is unless somebody is donating to our organization, we don't take money from artists. So we create selling opportunities for artists that they get to keep 100% of their proceeds. So I love that too, you know, truly seeing their worth.
Yeah. And the billboard company gets something. They probably don't get 100% of what a commercial person would give them, but they get something for a billboard that is sitting idle, right?
So every organization has a secret sauce, right? My secret sauce is my 26 years in the billboard industry. When I started Art Pop, I was a few years into the industry, but when Art Pop became official in Charlotte 11 years ago, I had been in the industry a significant amount of time. So it allows me to call companies. So back then, it was 20 billboards from Adams Outdoor Advertising. We now have 16 billboard partners
who
donate to our mission. And they're donating something tangible. They're donating billboard space to our mission.
Over a period of time.
Over
so
a
it's
period
space
of time.
And time.
Yes. And what we do is we renew. We have four different divisions of Art Pop now, so I'll walk you through all of the things we do. But we were born on billboards and we will always use billboards. But those billboards are donated to us. So I'm very fortunate. We do not pay anything for the billboards. We pay for the production and installation from time to time.
Do they get a write-off?
Oh, sure.
Good.
Yeah. They're doing tremendous work with and for us, and we're very fortunate, and this doesn't happen to all nonprofits or all public service organizations, but I am one of them. I am a billboard person to the bone. I will advocate for the outdoor advertising industry and be a part of the outdoor advertising industry till my last breath. It is just a terrific medium, and it is growing these artists' careers, but we are so fortunate that we are not paying for this space at all, or we wouldn't even exist. Art Pop has never seen $8 million of cash, and we receive $8 million of advertising space on a yearly basis.
Wow.
We wouldn't exist without the outdoor advertising industry.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've built us.
Yeah, and you're perfect. This builds the brand. I've seen it. I've known artists who've been up there. It does a wonderful thing. And it legitimizes them, so if they do ask $10,000, et cetera, for a painting, they go, well, they were up there. It's legitimized.
Yes. And I think that's a great word, but what we always hear from the artists, we hear a lot of success stories, so we're so fortunate to be able to, feed you lots of success stories. But the first thing that we hear has nothing to do with cash or business or income, and it has everything to do with confidence.
Mm.
And they all, if anything is a repetitive answer from these artists over the years, is that from the moment they get the phone call or the email that says they've been juried into our city's program, it's an immediate sense of confidence for them. And I think that when you're confident, you're semi-bulletproof, right? Confidence is such a beautiful thing, not arrogance, but confidence. And these artists are given an immediate confidence that then takes them into a whole nother world. Wow, my art was accepted into being on billboards all over the country. I feel pretty darn good about myself, right? And then they go on to be better in their meetings with their clients, better in their business, because we give them business courses. We put them through what we call Artist University. We connect them with the community. We connect them to paid opportunities.
What is Artist University?
So Artist University is a nonprofit organization that offers business of art classes. It was created and designed in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania by a gentleman named Andrew Simonette, who's a performance artist. And he's gone on to create these extraordinary books and teaching opportunities. So you hire him, and he literally still, after all these years, comes to Charlotte and does our Artist University classes in person. It's a 2-day course, and it teaches some good, just basic businesses, how to price your work, how to write an artist statement, just a little bit of everything, invoicing, just all sorts of things about the business of art. And then what happens after that weekend course is the artists meet usually once a month as a group, and they continue on and work through the workbooks.
Wow.
And we have an organization, actually a billboard advertising organization, called the Outdoor Advertising Association of America. They have their own nonprofit within OAAA called FOUR. And FOUR provides a grant that they've provided for us for the last 5 years that pays for
that. The number FOUR?
FOARE.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's like Foundation of Outdoor Advertising Research and something else.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they grant us $5,000 a year to pay for that class to give to our 20 artists every year.
Wow.
So it's not, a lot of people who know us, they see the billboards and they see the artists on billboards and they think that's Art Pop and there's nothing more to it. But it's so much more than that, especially now, 11 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Of what we're doing and how we're serving artists. And then the byproduct of all of this is our entire region gets to see art every single day, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, at no charge. Because you might not go to a gallery or museum, right? Only about 30% of our population goes to a gallery or museum.
Well, it's another way of producing what you would call public art.
Yes.
Or free public art.
Yes, yeah.
Art that you encounter.
Yeah.
Like a mural. Mm-hmm. And as Charlotte completely changes, as the face of Charlotte completely changes, you see a very intentional incorporation of art mm-hmm. within mm-hmm. the town. Mm-hmm. And it makes a huge difference between places which are, you know, interchangeable ads versus something that's textured, mm-hmm. that's unique, that's local.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. 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 And we're serving the Charlotte region, so we're not just a Mecklenburg, Charlotte proper mm-hmm. organization. We serve the entire region. So we cover 3 South Carolina counties, 11 North Carolina counties. 207 artists have been promoted through our billboards in the Charlotte region. And now that we have our newest division, and I'll talk to you about that, Inspiration Projects, we're probably 300 plus artists that we've supported over the last 11 years throughout the Charlotte region. And at one time, Art Pop was in 15 cities and 12 states. Decided 4 years ago to stop doing that and focus solely on the Charlotte region. It was a difficult but very smart decision all at the same time. I was overextending myself. And not any one project that we were doing was all that great. It was good. And super proud of it, but when we decided to put the full focus on the mission in the Charlotte region, all sorts of things started happening, and it became this what it is today, and so much more impactful for the artists, and I think more people know who we are now. We have so many more layers of the mission now versus running an open call, jurying in 20 artists, and putting those 20 artists on billboards. It has evolved into so much more than that now.
Yeah. I worked in television and local TV news, and, you know, the price of advertising in local TV news is the bottom's dropped out. I mean, it's followed radio and newspapers. Mm-hmm. But it strikes me, particularly with electronic billboards, mm-hmm. that they are a more or less stable medium. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that reflected in the value of these billboards?
Yeah, so I think, you know, outdoor advertising is the oldest form of advertising back from hieroglyphics, okay? So what it's grown into today and how nimble it can be today with digital out of home is so strong. And it, you know, can you ignore a billboard? I guess you can, but there's truly no secrets in billboards. So the value of them, with everybody consuming messages from so many different ways, you know, you're in that quiet moment in your car. And if the ad is a decent ad, you're probably going to look at it. The struggle is a lot of billboards are very difficult.
What is the trick? Give me a for instance, other than Burma Shave, which nobody hearing this will remember. Yeah. But
I remember.
give me a trick to, well, in, you know, Sea Rock City.
Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Sure.
Yeah, with the big cows.
Yeah. When an outdoor advertising campaign is done right, and I'm not talking about one billboard for 1 month, I'm talking about a campaign, mm-hmm. a serious campaign with terrific messaging, terrific creative, very effective. Unfortunately, a lot of people design terrible billboards, you know, and when you're seeing art on a billboard, strictly 98% of the billboard is art, that's a standout for you, you know, that works. And then we have our brand on it, and of course the artist's name, loud and proud on every single thing that we do. And it's easy to consume that. It's easy to take a look at an art billboard, you know, and it's been very, very helpful for the artists, you know.
My big deal breaker, and this mm-hmm. was true in television all over the place, is the number of fonts. Like how many words, how many letters mm-hmm. Do you have a simple, clear, and declarative, preferably something with humor, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and so what are some of your, like, all-time favorites?
For billboards?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. For me, when I was a salesperson, one of my favorite campaigns was a super hyper local Walmart campaign that I had the pleasure of working on, which was really interesting because usually big brands don't touch local much. But I had some really brave store market managers who worked with me and allowed us to create some really hyper-local ads about local farmers whose produce was in Walmart, different local...
So local farmers could see their picture up there, and mm-hmm. they could say, I know Ralph. Mm-hmm. I know him. Mm-hmm. I didn't know he was selling at Walmart.
Right, right. And so that was a favorite campaign. And then there was a campaign that I did for a local hardware store chain called Kramer's Hardware in Pennsylvania. And it was such a series of meetings to get a yes and to get a contract from the marketing manager from Kramer's Hardware. But when we did it so damn good that it just was fantastic for their business and looked great.
What did they say? What did they
look
like?
So we literally built a framed out house on a billboard. And it was the talk of the town, you know. And when I would go in on cold calls to back in the day when people still did cold calls, I guess they still do in some ways, but I would go into businesses and I would introduce myself and they would like, oh, did you do the Kramer's billboard? And so it would be those types of reactions, you know. And we did a tool belt, like a literal entire tool belt filled with tools, 3D props, the whole thing on the billboard. So I was the salesperson who would push my clients to do the best creative so that our market looked great, their brand looked great, they got great results. So I could go through probably a series of those that were favorites. But when people see a big canvas and they want to throw up all over it and put too much information on it, it just doesn't work. You know, so I would fight for that, and I know I would aggravate people, my clients. They'd be like, just do what I want you to do. No.
By the same token with artists, do you see paintings which are subtle, which you encourage them? That's good once you've got them in the door, but you need like big and bold for this?
Yeah, so when we receive, we do an open call every fall. And hundreds of artists apply for our program, but only 20 are allowed to be selected just by the way our program is structured. We select 19 adults and one senior high school student every year to be featured with us for an entire calendar year. The judging panel changes every year. We typically have 7 judges. So they all are looking for what they're looking for, right? So you'll see a very different look year over year.
And where did the judges come from?
So the judges are now, a lot of them are Art Pop alum artists, you know, but they're always someone studied in the arts, whether that be a gallery owner, a museum curator, somebody who has a degree in arts history. You know, it's always going to be very arts-minded people who are on the jurying and selection process. And you can... It's not just painters, so that's something, too, I'd love to clear up. A lot of people think because we're on billboards that it's painting or photography. That is absolutely not the case. It's photographed art of all disciplines. So we have fabric artists, wood artists, glass artists, ceramics, steel, metal.
Could you be a sculptor?
Absolutely, and be on billboards, yeah. Because it's really just a picture that is being produced for either digital or printed billboards, mm-hmm. you know, and it's also the original. What you're submitting has to be cropped for the rectangular traditional billboards. So you're actually only seeing a portion of the art when you're seeing the billboards for most of our traditional outdoor, you know. So that's interesting too.
Talk to me about Charlotte and the mm-hmm. public art in Charlotte. Seems to be a real hunger mm-hmm. for it. Some people love to grouse about, I can't believe we spent money on it. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, people are like, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Like, we're near the Scaly Bark station on mm-hmm. the blue line, the mm-hmm. Lynx line. Mm-hmm. And I like the discs. Mm-hmm. To me, they're evocative of railroad mm-hmm. or of, you know, a time when streetcars had mm-hmm. wheels. Mm-hmm. But they're made, it almost looks like, I don't know, terracotta or clay mm-hmm. or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can see them
static, mm-hmm. like stand on the sidewalk and look at them. But a lot of people will see them passing by them. So there's mm-hmm. a sense of movement. Mm-hmm. You get to see them from three dimensions. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of something that I think is fun. It's engaging. I don't get tired of it. Mm-hmm. It makes you feel better about mm-hmm. your day. Mm-hmm. What's Charlotte like to you? I mean, what do you see? You've been here for a generation.
Yeah, I feel like we're growing into more of an arts market. What we looked like 10 years ago, even in Charlotte, there wasn't a tremendous amount of public art. So I feel like people are really catching on to that. And I also feel like with the growth of Charlotte and how many people are moving to Charlotte, they're demanding that. They come from San Francisco. They come from New York City. They come from Chicago. They come from Austin, Texas here. And they're expecting to come to, they don't want a banking market. They want to see public art. That's important to them. So I think they've kind of demanded and set the tone for what Charlotte needs to look like. And God knows we have the talent here. So I think we're becoming more of an arts community, but I still feel like we have a heavy immaturity level on that in comparison to other cities. So there's much work to be done, but damn, we're on our way. Yeah, we're on our way.
There's also a lot of straight up bickering and squabbling about money and the Arts and Science Council. And, you know, there can be individual, you know, theater companies or other things that are like, blah, 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 I can't believe this. And a lot of that occupies it's a distraction. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah.
How do you try to, you know, people are very passionate. It's never impersonal. Mm-hmm. How do you try to like sort of be oil in the water?
So I feel like for us, we do it by our mission. We're trying to change the narrative on paying artists, valuing artists, leaving behind your mark, all of those types of things, and try not to get too involved in the politics of things. It's messy, and it's really messy in 2024. Mm-hmm. Without a doubt, the city of Charlotte is coming to the end on its 3-year agreement with the Arts and Cultural Division. They've taken money away from the Arts and Science Council to take that money in-house and distribute those funds, and we have been the recipient of them, so there's some positivity in there. But it's nominal. There's not enough that the city has or is distributing, so that makes it very difficult. They're doing their best with what they have to work with financially. Arts and Science Council is doing their best with what they have to work with financially, but it is a tumultuous time. We're in an election year. All of the different factors. The City of Charlotte's agreement right now is a 3-year agreement that ends in June, so none of us are privy to what happens after June. Recent front page news was Arts and Science Council is perhaps merging with Foundation for the Carolinas. What? So there's a lot going on right now. So I would like to stay in our art pop lane and continue to support local artists and try not to get sucked into anything that is difficult, because, you know, we don't have enough staff to be worrying about all of those things right now. We need to stay on mission.
And 5 years, 10 years down the road, mm-hmm. this could be a lot more stable. You could look back on this as this was a time when there was a lot of sort of chop.
Yes, yes. Yeah, but like the last 3 years have been, quite frankly, abundance in the arts. It's been phenomenal, especially for our mission. You know, when we decided to fully focus on the Charlotte region, just one great thing after another. So we're in a little bit of a shock year right now. Did not expect this at year 11 to be in the... There's a lot of financial woes in the arts and cultural sector in Charlotte right now. Not just art pop, but the arts and cultural sector in Charlotte is suffering in 2024 for sure.
But you've got a model that has worked.
Yes.
And it's based on, and see, okay, this is me, but I think the magic thing is to connect for-profit, non-profit, and government. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so Arts and Science Council, largely government dollars. Mm-hmm. For-profit is the outdoor advertising, Adams mm-hmm. and others, mm-hmm. and non-profit is you. Mm-hmm. And so that's the magic triangle. Mm-hmm. Whenever somebody tries to do it with just two, it's not as stable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One person pulls out, the other. But if you can get all three,
mm-hmm.
and I don't care if it's homelessness, the arts, whatever,
mm-hmm.
you need all three sides, and you don't need one side throwing shade against the other
or the other two. We're all in this together.
Right.
Every arts organization, you know, there's so many incredible grassroots arts organizations, and then of course your museums and such of the world. We all need to be working together. We do not need to be apart from each other. Now is the time. If there was ever was a time, it's this year that we all need to come together.
Do you ever encounter the notion that, well, if so-and-so sells paintings, that's money that's not going to go to mine. You know, this sort of scarcity as opposed to, hey, we're all, you know, we're all in this together. We're all going to, there's room enough for all of us to succeed.
There is definitely room for all of us to succeed. We live in a feast of a city, right? We have so much famine in this city. I do know that. It's not like I'm not aware of that. I'm extremely aware of that. But the feast that is going on in this city, there should not be an arts organization that's hurting in Charlotte, North Carolina. The money is there. We live in a very abundant city. I try to stay in an abundance mindset. This year is trying me to my nth degree but there is plenty to go around here. And if we would all just work together, it would be that much more helpful. Yeah.
The Charlotte is Creative guys.
Oh, they're amazing.
Tim Miner and Matt Olin.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Miner said to me that early on when they started the reciprocity circles,
mm-hmm.
they said, Charlotte does not have a resource problem. Charlotte has a resource allocation problem.
Mm.
Now, to a certain extent, do you find even small nonprofits who think that someone else is like their enemy when you're like, dude, we are not your enemy. You're not our enemy. We're all trying to make the mm-hmm. arts succeed. We're not in competition with
you. Yeah, I feel like for us and those who we run in the same lanes with, Charlotte is Creative is a perfect example. We serve the same group of people. We do it in different ways, but we always have each other's backs. Like, I literally have Tim and Matt in my phone on I can text them anytime and go, hey guys, I'm having a tough day. Would you give me a few minutes? Or, you know, hey, do you want to collaborate on this thing? The last 2 years, they've been our exclusive reveal in revealing who our 20 artists would be for the year.
Fine.
So we are playing in the same sandbox very well together. Yeah. And support each other and truly care about each other. So I can't speak for a lot of the organizations just because we are too short-staffed and have a to-do list 10 miles long every day. We're probably doing the work of 20 or 30 people with 3.5 people. So there's not a lot of time for that. And so if somebody is not playing well, then we're probably just going to move on. But those guys are just phenomenal. And we do so many similar things for the same people that we need to support each other. You know, yeah. And I believe in them. I know their hearts are in the right place.
And our mutual friend, Kendall Kendrick, who
yes.
connected us, big into history.
Yes.
But they had a MEC 250,
mm-hmm.
the run-up to the 250th anniversary of the United States, and they had in Independence Park, a festival this last weekend, mm-hmm. and there were performing artists, and there were visual artists. And so do you also, I gather, look for opportunity points in other areas, history, et cetera?
Yeah, so really interesting. May 16th, we are collaborating with Carolina Farm Trust, and we've mm-hmm. never done that before. So Carolina Farm Trust serves food inequities and encourages farm to table, and they do so much. I can't speak well on their mission, but I know that they're great folks doing wonderful things in the nonprofit sector and the food area. We are going to be partnering with them for their annual event that they call Night at the Museum. And we are going to be matching 20 artists with 20 chefs and mixologists.
Oh, fun.
And so it's just going to be a hell of a night. And
yeah.
I'm so excited about that. And we've never done anything like that. So this is a reinvention type year at year 11 for Art Pop. Charlotte loves new. And they want new all the time, even when you're a nonprofit just working your tail off, trying to just keep your doors open. Charlotte demands new and innovation constantly. So we are always having to think different and think bigger and better and what else are we going to do and how much more impact can we have. So I think doing something like this as a test drive year of we're trying all sorts of things, I think that's going to prove to be beneficial and see where we can have more impact. But I love the thought of bringing art and food together. I mean, come on. It doesn't get any better than art and food to me.
Right.
Yeah. So it should be a great night.
And I love your mentality of abundance.
Yeah. And, you know, we were, and along with Charlotte is Creative, I don't know if you know about this, but Lending Tree had a cohort for 3 years. They selected, Lending Tree Foundation selected 10 local Charlotte nonprofits to support for a 3-year window of time. Two of those were arts organizations, Art Pop Street Gallery and Charlotte is Creative. And all 10 organizations received $125,000 a year for 3 years. It was extraordinary. And there was a whole lot more than money going on. They donated incredible amounts of money to 10 organizations. All of us received the same amount, but they also gave us a lot of training. And they had a woman named Anna Barber out of Washington, D.C., who has her own fundraising consulting company. She's extraordinary, and she just drilled that into my brain to have an abundance mindset. And while I'm always a pretty positive person and see the good and see the abundance, sometimes it's very difficult in the nonprofit sector when you get told no 9 times out of 10 on funding. But I hear her in my ear all the time, abundance mindset. Wendy, stay there, stay there. So I do my best to stay there, and I can't do it every day. I have to say, I do have days where I'm a little nervous, and just to be honest about that, but I hear Anna in my head every day, abundance mindset, Wendy. And so she put that in my head, and that's something I learned through the Lending Tree Foundation cohort.
Did you go to college?
I did not. You're the first person to ask me that.
Do you, because there are a lot of, you know, high school seniors, this is a time of incredible change in post-secondary education.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, everybody who from, you know, master plumbers, you know, the building trades,
yes,
et cetera.
Yeah.
And I know guys who own multi-million dollar businesses, mm-hmm, who are like, MBA, worthless. Get out, get your nose bloodied, get knocked down, get back up. Yeah, and you're raising your hand.
You betcha.
So if you had a daughter who wanted to run away from home and see the world and follow her, mm-hmm, boyfriend / trailer park dream, what would you say to like an intern with you now who's thinking, do I go to SCAD?
Mm-hmm.
Do I go to a business school?
Mm-hmm.
Do I have a pop-up stand and work a job and, mm-hmm, blah, blah, blah?
I would say, depending on what it is that that person's going, wants to do or is being pulled to do, there are education that makes all the sense in the world for them to pursue degrees. If you're going to be a doctor, if you're going to be an attorney, you know, whatever that is.
Art history?
For art history, I mean, certainly. I'm not against it. It's just my life worked out really different. And I didn't come from a college family. We had, out of the 5 children in my family, we've had 1 college graduate. And he was an extraordinary, my brother is brilliant and was born brilliant, and everyone wanted him because he was a prodigy. So college was a no-brainer for him because it was completely paid for. You know, everybody wanted my brother. The rest of us didn't get quite all of that, and me leaving home at such a young age and living hand to mouth, there was no college that was going to be in my future. I'm going to do that, though. I am going to go to college. My understanding is in South Carolina or North Carolina, I don't know the ages, but it's either 60 or 65, you can go to college for free. And I am going to do that.
Turned 65. It's time for me to go to college.
Yes, you could. You could. So I want to get an art history major. I really do. That is on my bucket list, and I'm going to do that when the time's right. It's not that far away.
Do you know which school you would enjoy?
I actually
are you committed to Charlotte?
I'm actually looking at Winthrop. Mm. Yeah, I may.
Do you live in South Carolina?
No, I actually live in Troutman now. I'm a Plaza Midwood girl who moved out to the woods.
Oh my word!
Yeah, so I lived on Pecan Avenue in Plaza Midwood behind.
You're out near the lake.
And I am out in the middle of the woods. Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty sweet. It's a hell of a commute, but I get to see lots of billboards on the way.
Yes.
So college wasn't for me, but I had great work ethic. And I've worked, I seriously have worked since I was 14 years old. That's what I know. That's what I've done. And it's worked out really well for me. You know, I'm so fortunate to have had a very difficult life that turned into something so beautiful and allowed me to give to others. You know, I mean, that's pretty great stuff.
Are you a person who believes in God, divine spirit, fate, random chaos?
So I definitely am a Christian. I definitely believe, but I also believe in Mother Earth and the universe and what you put out coming back to you. So I have extreme faith in humanity, even when there's so much crazy shit going on. I do tend to be looking on the positive side of thing and seeing the good in people and not taking somebody for face value, giving them a moment to allow to introduce themselves in their hearts. So, yes, I believe in God, but I'm not crazy. Like, I don't go too on the far end of that to where you probably wouldn't want to be in the same room with me or something.
But I mean,
like
if you were saying I'm going to be the head of a nonprofit, you know, getting $8 million worth of donations, you know, and in-kind donations every year, if you'd have told that 17-year-old girl or her mom that, they would have said. But your mom and your stepdad lived to see it, correct?
They did, yeah. Not to the extent that we're at today. My dad more than my mom, but they did, and they were so proud, you know. And I was still working my full-time career back then when my mother was alive. And she was just so proud and so shocked because she probably thought things would be very different for me and it probably wouldn't have been very good. So I happily surprised my mother.
That's great.
Yeah, and she was super proud.
If you and I got struck by lightning today, mm-hmm. and the only thing that survived was our audio, mm-hmm. what is your legacy?
Art pop. Truly, I want this thing to go on far beyond me. You know, when you build something and you're not around anymore, if that doesn't carry on, then I don't really think that you've done a whole hell of a lot. I'd love to see our organization grow with or without me and continue to serve artists and continue to make art accessible to the community. My legacy truly is building confidence and building success in local artists. So I'd love to see that go on and somebody to, you know, when I'm not here anymore, for somebody to be as passionate about it and really truly want to serve these artists. Artists have this uncanny ability to tackle difficult situations through art. And there's so many conversations and issues going on in our world right now. I think those types of things are so important. Artists seem to always be the ones who sit in that uncomfortableness and are willing to address it and create beauty around it and create something that you can go see without having to pay for. You know, so everyone gets to enjoy, everyone should be enjoying public art, no matter where you're from, no matter what you know about art or what you don't know about art. And that's something like our events and the markets that we create, they're always free. They're always open to the public. There's never a dress code. You come and go as you please because we don't want to create barriers of uncomfortableness for people to engage with art. It should always be easy and comfortable. And it's everything for a town.
Well, I honor and acknowledge everything you've done on behalf of Charlotte and the Charlotte region.
Thank you.
And I really thank you for your time.
Oh,
and
my gosh, thank you.
For your contribution.
Thank you.
I know what's behind all that a lot more.
It's been a beautiful thing. I wish you could meet the rest of my team. I have an incredible team. I worked at Art Pop by myself for 8.5 years. And now I have 2.5 other folks who work at Art Pop, and they're extraordinary. They're not just employees. They're family, and they're amazing, and they cared as much as I do about artists.
You seem like a grateful person.
I am so grateful. Mm-hmm. Leaving home at 16, never going to college, having the opportunities that I created from hard work, but people gave to me. I never expected to have what I have, and then to have hundreds of people who I adore, and it's a mutual adoration. I feel like I'm the luckiest girl in the world. Life is never easy, but it's so good.
Thanks, Wendy.
Thank you.
If you love art, you love Charlotte, you love artists, check out Art Pop. You can find it if you look for ArtPopStreetGallery.com. ArtPopStreetGallery.com. And some of the coolest things they do are not even the billboards. They have something called Inspiration Projects, in which they connect businesses with artists for all kind of what they call turnkey creative solutions. So that could be any number of things. It could be your graphic arts. It could be a marketing campaign. It's really amazing program, and this is a nonprofit, so you can give your tax-deductible contribution to them as well. Get that little plug in there. Thank you, Wendy, and thank you for everything you do for all the artists. We appreciate you.
In Her Words is a production of the Queen City Podcast Network in cooperation with Balto Creative Media. Allison Andrews at Andrews Creative, Rachel Clapp Miller, and Roshonda Pratt are developmental producers. Sally Higgins at Higgins & Owens tries to keep us legal. Our music is A Day at the Park by the group Pictures of the Floating World. Your announcer is Catherine Smith. That's me. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and take a moment to rate and review. It really helps others find us. If you love us, go to our Patreon page at patreon.com. Look for Man Listening, one word, no spaces. A small investment makes a big difference in lifting up the voices of women.
A huge shout out and thank you to everyone who's supported little old me, and also manlistening.com, In Her Words, the podcast, and now voicelocket.com. Check it out, voicelocket.com. Thanks so much.
Thank you for your support. We believe one voice can change the conversation. Thanks so much.